Welcome to another exciting, enthralling, thrilling episode of
Sitting around talking movies. That's what we do.
That's what we do. We sit around, we're talking about movies. We talk about predominantly, let's say, on-demand movies. Out of those 300 movies in your cable box, you probably only recognize five of the titles.
Five good ones.
So we're telling you what's worth watching, on demand, and what we should avoid. And in the words of Bill McCuddy,
we watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
That's absolutely true. And I'm joined by not only Bill McCuddy, but as usual, Bill Brigoli.
How you doing?
And also, Perry Nemiroff.
Hey.
From Collider. And this is sort of the after show to a TV show we do on New York One and Time Warner Cable called Talking Pictures. And we're going to start. Today we're talking about.
You were great, by the way, Perry, in Collider. I loved you.
This week on Sitting Around Talking Movies, we're talking about The Good Dinosaur, the new Pixar movie, and lots of other Pixar films, how they compare to the other Pixar films. We're talking about some new movies like Hashtag Horror with Greta Gerwig and Timothy Hutton and a bunch of young...
Greta Gerwig isn't in Hashtag Horror.
Did I say Greta Gerwig?
Yeah, you did.
I meant Chloe Sevigny.
Yeah.
Right, I'm sorry. That's true. And
The lawsuit from Greta Gerwig will be coming in.
But we're talking about Greta Gerwig's film, Mistress America, with her and directed by her boyfriend and co-written by her, Noah Baumbach. We're talking about American Ultra, which is just coming on demand with Jesse Eisenberg. And Kristen Stewart, who did I mention by mistake?
Greta Gerwig.
She's not in that movie either.
We try to gloss over the mistakes, but we enjoy when you go back to them.
That's true. I bet you didn't see The Good Dinosaur, did you, Bill Brigoli?
Was Greta Gerwig in it?
No, she was not in it. But did you see it?
I didn't get a chance.
Oh, well, here's what it's about. You know, Pixar has never released two movies in 1 year, and this is the first time they're doing that. They had Inside Out, which came out, when did that come out, over the summer, or was it?
I think it was June.
June, okay, and now they have this, which, there was a problem with this. John Lasseter, who runs Pixar, at the 11th hour, did some script revisions, which is not that easy to do with animation, because you have to kind of reanimate stuff and get voice talent back in.
You have to tell a character they're being erased.
They recast the entire voice cast for this movie.
They got rid of Bill Hader.
I was actually talking to John Lithgow.
They got rid of Neil Patrick Harris. They got rid of a lot of people.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I was told they were just going to re-record their voices, and then the week later is when they announced that the whole voice cast was completely wiped out and recast.
So without
Sam Elliott?
No, Sam Elliott, I don't know if he was originally in it. He's great, GMC trucks. But he's in it. I don't know whether he was originally. If you're right, Perry, and I think you probably are, that they cleaned house. I know the little kid who just basically grunts through the whole movie was an adult, and then they recast that as like a 14 or 15-year-old.
And what about
kid.
Arlo the dinosaur, the star of the film?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it wouldn't have made much of a difference because this has got a perfect title. It's a good movie. It's not a great dinosaur.
Well, here's what it's about. There's an alternate history of the planet Earth where a meteor does not hit Earth and dinosaurs consequently do not become extinct. And they coexist with Neanderthal human beings. And there's this dinosaur named Arlo who's scared of his shadow.
He's chicken of chickens.
Yes, he is. There's a whole scene where chickens scare him. So, you know, the dinosaurs are very entrepreneurial. They've evolved. They plow the land. have a field where they grow corn. And in an anthropomorphic.
It looks like they're doing coke when they're plowing a field.
Well, there's a hallucinogenic scene. We'll get to that in a second. But anyway, Arlo is a cowardly dinosaur, and he gets lost from his family. And, he has to find his way back home with the help of this young little primitive kid, human being, who doesn't speak English, who just grunts. The dinosaur, on the other hand, does speak English. And
All the animals.
You know, it sounds like Finding Nemo with pterodactyls.
You know what it is? It's one part. A lot of this is stolen from, stolen or borrowed from The Lion King. And this is not a spoiler. The father dinosaur dies early on, and that's sort of like a Mufasa thing in The Lion King. And there's a lot of
That like every Disney movie? Doesn't a parent always have to die?
Yeah. You know, and there's How
going
to Train.
Back to Bambi and.
And there's the Jungle Book where you know they're on the adventure and they run across all the different species in the jungle, and here they're running into pterodactyls and all kinds of other things. And then there's so there's the Jungle Book. There's How to Train Your Dragon, but not as good as any of those films. But I think it's okay. I think before you chime in, Perry, and I do want you to chime in because I know you have a very different view than I do.
He stops talking eventually. Trust me, we've done this before.
I think it's a good film for kids. Usually with a Pixar movie, there's two levels here. There's one for adults, and there's one for kids. You look at Ratatouille, you look at Up, you look at Wall-E, you look at the Toy Story films. There are all these, you know, kids don't get, they'll love it. The kids will love it, but, you know, there's all these jokes in there that are there strictly for adults, and I love it, even Inside Out, you know? And this, I think, is just a kid's film. I think kids will enjoy it. I think audiences will. I think
you and I saw it in the same theater last night. Did you sit next to kids? Because I did.
Well, it's funny. At the end of the movie, I saw a bunch of kids, and I specifically went over to them, and I go, did you enjoy it? They were young little kids, and they said, yeah, we liked it.
You know? And Mommy, this is the same man that offered us candy the other time in that van. They did because I was sitting next to a very young child.
How young?
Four, maybe.
Okay.
And she was a little restless.
All right, Perry.
For what that's
worth. Wax poetic on how much you love the film. Yeah.
I thought a 3 or 4 year old would be terrified of this.
Yeah, there are some scary
scenes.
That
was probably the one thing that bugged me about this movie was the dinosaur brutality. Like, poor Arlo just gets, like, knocked out and beat up so, like, to the point that it made me uncomfortable.
Like Fight Club, almost.
Well, maybe a little more. And they also show the bruising and the cuts on the dinosaur, which I found really surprising.
Oh, that's
normally,
interesting.
Because,
yeah.
Like, normally, like, an animal in a cartoon gets knocked around and gets right back up, but they never kind of let you forget what the dinosaur went through, which made me uncomfortable, but I also respected. But overall, this is one of the weirdest movies I've seen in a really long time. Not what I expected at all. It just goes from super dark, really intense action thriller where it's so intense to the point that it's scary, and then all of a sudden it's like this kooky, crazy comedy with critters and like this psychedelic sequence that I almost lost it in that movie.
Yeah, they eat some kind of hallucinogenic berries.
I think they were drunk.
And then they start tripping.
That was, I was absolutely hysterical.
That's got to be a Disney first.
Yeah, they're smiling while they're tripping. The little kid, the dinosaur, they're laughing like, look at this, we're melting, and look at this, we're turning into flowers.
Yeah.
It's kind of bizarre for a Disney film.
The movie jumps between like the dark action and that kind of comedy so quickly, though, that I was hysterically laughing at all the jokes, and then all of a sudden I couldn't stop, so I'd be laughing during all these
harrowing scenes. I didn't find it funny at all.
Too.
That was one of the problems I had with the movie.
You like the whack-a-mole scene?
No.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
I thought it was so adorable.
Bill, the whack-a-mole.
Did you find it funny, Bill?
I think there are a couple of good jokes in it, but no, as a whole, I don't think it's up to the caliber of any of the other Pixars. And really, we're burying the lead here, which is that there's absolutely nothing original about this story. Think about all the Pixar movies, except for Cars 2, that have really tried to tell a unique story. And there's nothing unique about this. You said, yeah, it steals from a lot of other
movies.
Lion
King, Jungle Book.
It has a second director. You mentioned Lasseter did a rewrite, but they also changed directors, which they've done 4 times. In Pixar history. And
when else did they do that?
They did
Brave.
It on.
What?
Go
Brave.
Ahead.
Definitely.
Yeah, Brave, Cars 2, I think, and one other. This is the 4th time they've done it. And, you know, it takes years to make these things, and it takes a week to do like 3 or 4 seconds, and it burns people out. And so it's a process that you're either in for, you either drink the Kool-Aid or you don't, apparently. And, you know, the bad news of that is instead of taking 30 days to make a lousy movie, you get to the end of 3 or 4 years and you go, oh, this is not so great, and you're stuck.
Well, you know, I think that the one thing that this movie does have going for it, there's this process called photorealism, and I don't really understand what that means, but I kept reading.
It makes it look real, like a
photo. No, but I mean, are they taking a photograph and drawing over the photograph? I don't understand what it is, but
no,
I have
it's a term that just means it's so lifelike that it looks like a photograph.
Well, the panoramic vista backgrounds of this, be it the rivers, the mountains, the fields that they're plowing, the landscapes are just. It wowed
there's
me.
An opening
I'm
water
looking
shot.
At this and
there's
I'm,
an opening water shot where you think it's film. You
yeah,
think they
it's
shot.
Incredible.
That is pretty amazing.
And then you have these dopey characters that, so it looks like it's real.
Right.
And then you have the dopey animated dinosaur characters which don't fit in with
the,
what?
I was surprised by how, and like the dinosaurs do have a cartoonish look to them, but I thought that they fit really well with that photoreal background, like surprisingly well, too well than they should have.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think if you're going to do a photo realistic background, you could have gone the, you know, Jurassic World route and made a real-looking dinosaur. You know, I mean, it looks like a Gertie the, you know, Dino the dinosaur from the Flintstones. It's a little bit better.
The T-Rexes and, like, the way that
or
they
the
gallop.
Remember the Sinclair dinosaur?
Yes. The
or am I really dating myself here? You remember that, Bergoli?
Yes.
You driving the Model T home for the Thanksgiving?
Yeah, it's true. It's true, you know, but I don't know. The landscapes, the backgrounds were breathtaking. The movie kind of like was dull, but you loved the film.
I absolutely loved it. I walked out just like so genuinely happy and like excited. I laughed harder than I've laughed in any movie I've seen this year.
I won't say that. I will say that, you know, there is an it does get me emotionally at the end. I mean, there is that emotional hook that gets you at the end. But, you know, this is not the emotional punch that I had at the end of Toy Story 3 or the emotional punch that I had at the beginning of Up, where
those
they had
are more original.
that five-minute montage of Ed Asner's character.
Or the opening of WALL-E where there's no dialogue for like 20 minutes. I mean,
or the WALL-E thing when he's reunited with the cockroach. I mean, my God. I mean, it's like, it was a little emotional at the end of The Good Dinosaur, but it wasn't like on the level of that. What's Brigoli? What's your favorite Pixar film?
You know what? I'll tell you the Pixar film that made me cry.
Go ahead.
Oh boy.
Toy Story 2.
Toy Story 3 made me cry.
Yeah, it's
2 made
three.
Me cry because there's that Sarah McLachlan song, When Somebody Loved Me. That had me welling up.
I don't really know that song. Can you sing a little more of it?
No, I'll start bawling all over the place. It wouldn't be nice.
It would, to me, the biggest cry I've had at a Pixar film was the end of Toy Story 3 when Andy finally gets reunited with the toys and plays with the toys again and finds, you know, they after going through that horrible daycare center experience with the Ned Beatty bear, actually finds a nice young girl to take in the toys and finds another home for the toys. That and I met it was a party for that movie War Horse. And I ran into the guy who wrote Toy Story 3, and I told him, I said, I cried so hard at my daughter. We were crying really bad at the end of your movie that you wrote. And he goes, I was crying when I wrote it.
He didn't say you're a pussy.
No, he said I cried when I wrote it, you know?
Harry, what's your favorite Pixar? Is it this one?
No. Toy Story 3 is definitely the one that made me cry the most. My favorite is WALL-E, and I named my puppy WALL-E.
Oh, really?
I'm absolutely obsessed
WALL-E
with
WALL-E. WALL-E is such a good film.
I mentioned it during the show today. I'm a big pet lover, so anything like a cute animated creature that's like somewhat pet-like, that's probably one of the reasons why I liked The Good Dinosaur so much, is because it like...
Because you had a pet dinosaur at one time growing up?
I wish. It turns the whole boy and his dog concept on its head, and I had a lot of fun with that.
All right, so here's my trivia question, since your favorite movie is WALL-E. What movie is WALL-E watching over and over again on an endless loop on a VHS cassette in the movie WALL-E?
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
It's a little piece of a musical.
I knew I was going to have a brain fart no matter what question you asked me.
No, it's not Singing in the Rain.
You're going to say it, and then I'm going to be like, oh, I knew that.
I think it's The Music Man. That's what I think. Somebody, it could be Hello Dolly.
Wait, you asked the question and you don't know the answer?
No, I'm asking it. I didn't say I have the answer. I think it's either Hello, Dolly.
This is the level of planning that listeners have grown accustomed to on Sitting Around Talking.
I think it's Hello, Dolly.
Me now. Well,
we're going to find out. Next week we'll have the answer. Next week.
That's a good tease. That's a good
thing. There you go. What's your favorite Pixar movie, McCuddy?
I'm gonna go with the crowd on Toy Story 3. Although I have to say, all the Toy Stories I think are so innovative and cool, and I really like them.
Well, isn't that amazing that like we're all saying, except for Perry, but I'm sure you like Toy Story 3.
Oh yeah, very much.
I mean, that we're saying that out of these unbelievable, you know, catalog of films in the Pixar stable,
Toy Story 3.
It's like the third in the series. I mean, that's like amazing.
As opposed to we talked about Ice Age on the show today, where they just got progressively. I mean, they started out okay and just got worse after that.
Yeah, and they started out okay, nothing again on the level of.
Well, that
a great...
was Fox's attempt to like have a franchise.
It was the definition of a fun for the whole family kind of movie, and that was fine. It's just you can only sustain that for so long without the stories getting more interesting, and they don't.
I would go with Toy Story 3. I would also say, as my favorite, but I would say that close up there, and maybe the funniest one to me is Monsters, Inc., that I find that to be brilliant. And as you said, McCuddy, talk about innovative. You know, I mean, that was so fresh and original. And I also love Ratatouille. I think Ratatouille, there's a speech that Peter O'Toole is this critic gives at the end of the speech of that's like why he likes being a critic.
It's also kind of the least Pixar-y looking. I mean, they
kind of
try to make it look
Paris
more like a traditional Disney cartoon.
No love for
like
Finding Nemo?
Yeah, I like Ratatouille. It was a good foodie movie, too.
It was a good foodie movie. The rat's in the kitchen, and he's
Perry's
like,
right. What about?
Yeah, Finding
come back, Nemo. Come back.
Well, Finding Albert Dory's Brooks. Coming out next year.
I'm psyched for that.
Finding Dory's coming out, and
there's Toy Story 4 on the way, also.
Yeah, Toy Story 4. Well, I just saw an interview with Tom Hanks. It's coming out in 2018.
That's how they have to plan
that. That's when it's coming out, you know? And
you know, we've all
like...
interviewed those people, and they really don't. Some of those actors have no recollection of. They have to go see the movie to be reminded of what they said in it, because they sit in a room like 3 or 4 years earlier and do these lines,
well,
and then they'll get called.
Tom Hanks, I was watching this.
I was watching this
British talk show on YouTube, and I forgot the host's name, but he had Tom Hanks on. And Tom Hanks had very short, cropped, blonde hair and a blonde mustache. I don't know what movie he's doing. Do you have any idea what he's doing?
I think you were drunk. This never happened.
No. Listen to this. No. And he had on some other people as well. And it was like an old American talk show where, like, it wasn't like the one guest comes on and leaves. It was like Tom Hanks.
No, that's on the BBC. That's,
But it's interesting. It was like the old Dick Cavett or Johnny Carson show where the guests stay there and they are actually, it's a talk show. They're all talking amongst
each other. Yeah, that's another answer we don't have.
Well, you think about it. Well, next week's podcast, we'll have the answer to who hosts
it's
that
not
show.
Gordon, it's the number one talk show over in England.
But there's all these people do the show. I saw Anne Hathaway and Robert De Niro were on the show with these people I never heard of, and they're all having a discussion. Well, anyway, Tom Hanks goes that when he does these recording sessions for Pixar, they are 5-hour sessions. And he said that his diaphragm hurts so much because he has to be so high energy and scream so much when he does the Woody voice that literally when he's driving home, he needs ice to put on his diaphragm because it's not just doing a movie, because he's yelling like the whole time he's going like, come on, we got to get Buzz. Come on, we got to, you know, where's Ham? We got to, and you know, and it hurts me just doing this for a second. Imagine 5 hours of that.
It's
not any calm. What's that?
It's hurting us to watch you.
That was quite the impression.
But it's not. But it's not like he's doing it for a minute. It's 5 hours of screaming, and everything is hyper exciting. You know what I mean? It's like, oh no, we've got to get Andy in the toys and the trunk and the, you know. And he says it's killer. But I think that's interesting. So whoever this mystery guy is, we'll tell you next week, and you could watch that on the thing. Moving on from The Good Dinosaur, there's a new movie with Chloe. Is it?
Sevigny,
you know, potato. I was told Sevigny. Chloe Sevigny, and who doesn't really star in the movie. She's just in the movie, as is Timothy Hutton, who probably would get the worst acting performance I've seen all year.
That's also the worst scene I've seen all year.
When his one just
big
screaming
scene
and
where
yelling.
He runs in the house like a lunatic.
Yeah, and what is this? Perry, tell everybody. Describe the movie. Or Bill, one of you guys, tell people what this movie is about.
Perry, tee it up for
okay.
us.
Okay, so Neil insisted that I introduce this movie during the show today because I love horror, but this is
she
not,
does.
This
she is loves
not,
horror.
I do, but this
She's
is not
Comic-Con
my kind
girl.
Of horror movie at all. It's about these 12-year-old girls who are having a sleepover, and they're super obsessed with social media, and they're very into cyber. Bullying too, and even though they all have these terrible issues that they're struggling with, they still pick on each other to no end, to the point that it makes you uncomfortable. And then, of course, it's a horror movie, so some sort of masked villain comes into play, and it's just not fun to watch at all. One, because the cyberbullying of 12-year-old girls, it's insane.
You're fat. You're a tramp. You sleep around. Yeah, it's like,
it's
oh
like
God.
Just
well, that's timely and cool, and I mean that it should be better.
You like
it's
this
just,
thing?
No, but I'm just saying I see how it got greenlit. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, no, so do I.
They have these Candy Crush-esque visuals that keep cropping up throughout the movie. I don't even understand.
I thought those were terrible. And as someone who is I am very addicted to social media. And, you know, I play Candy Crush in various games, too.
Well, I thought McCuddy would like this movie. I thought you would like this movie because you like that horrible Michael Cera movie that I can't stand, which is like
Oh, no, you're totally wrong about that.
What's that movie?
Scott Pilgrim versus...
Yeah, I love Scott Pilgrim.
Thank you.
See,
Harry,
you
the
know,
voice
Scott
of reason
Pilgrim
once again.
Did a much better job of playing with visual effects
I
like
hate
that than
movie.
This does.
Well, this movie, we all agree, stinks. And I don't even understand this movie. I mean, I'm watching this movie for an hour, and I'm like, what is even going on here? And the killing stuff doesn't really, I mean, if you like horror movies, that doesn't even kick into like the last 15 minutes of the movie.
Right.
Prior to that, you're just watching these girls like just
dress
bitching at each
and
other
and
going,
yell at each
you're
other.
Too fat.
And
you
like
have
me.
Another cupcake, oh fatty, and I'm like, oh my God, it's like chalk on a nails on a
yeah.
on a chalkboard.
Did
you
that
know?
Touch a nerve? Way. Were you a fat teenager, Neil?
No, I was never a fat teenager. I was just bored. I wasn't even offended. I was bored.
Well, because it's the same thing over and over again. They all gang up on one girl. Then finally they realize one girl is being mean. They kick her out of the house, and the whole thing happens all over again.
Right.
Chloe Sevigny is in this so briefly, but Timothy Hutton, what the hell are you doing? I'm telling you, Brugoli, he comes on the screen, and he's just like, where's my daughter? Where is she? And I'm like, what in the world? What are you doing? I mean, it's like, it's almost like an SNL skit. Like he's doing a parody of a character on SNL.
Nick Cage School of Overacting.
It's just.
Oh my God, Nick
You know
Cage
what I felt like this whole cast.
And I like Timothy Hutton, generally speaking.
No, sure. And if people who don't know, I mean, he was in Ordinary People.
I think he was nominated for an Oscar for that.
He's been in tons of great movies.
Falcon and the Snowman? Was he in Falcon and the Snowman?
He was in Taps. I think that this would have been great if they had taken the whole cast over to, like, London and been on a late night show hosted by Graham Norton.
There we go.
And
oh, is that the guy? Oh, well, ladies and gentlemen, here it is. Final Jeopardy. You have to put in the form. What is?
Who is Graham Norton?
Who is Graham Norton?
So assuming
Alex.
That's who you were talking about. This is not to be hashtag horror. Cool idea. Cool title. Like buzzy title. And this sort of a downtown performance artist made it. Tamara Subkoff. Yeah.
Yeah. I say hashtag, please don't make any movies anymore, Tamara Subkoff. That is my.
I think that's more than 140 characters, but okay. So what else is
there? Is her name? I'm just checking her name.
Tara Subkoff.
Yeah. Tara Subkoff. What did I say?
What did you say?
We never get anything right. Here's what we will get right. Here's what we will get right.
What are we getting right?
We're going to have a conversation about this because I love this movie and it might be in my top 10.
Yeah.
But you guys are sort of lukewarm. perform on it. I like Mistress America a lot. And I'll tell you what's great about Greta Gerwig. Except for the horrible remake of Arthur, there isn't an actress working right now that knows how to choose her material and write for herself along with Noah Baumbach better than anyone else.
Listen,
here's
I like
Kristen Wiig, for example, who the stupid role in The Martian, where she's a throwaway.
Yeah, what about that horrible independent film she just did?
Yeah, she's made some bad choices. Greta Gerwig is like the Carol Lombard of this generation. She's smart. She's just good-looking enough to be very attractive, but also sort of approachable, I think, for theater goers. And I just think this movie, Mistress America, about a kind of young Auntie Mame in New York, who takes this younger girl under her wing and regrets it, is really, really good. Funny, smart, well-written, and I recommend
what
it.
What did you think of Mistress? I'm not thrilled.
Actually, I'm glad that Perry's here because there's this dynamic between the two women that I didn't quite understand, and I don't understand women that well. So tell me, please, what was going on with these two women, Perry, please? Is this like a sisterly thing, even though they're not really sisters?
That was actually my big problem with the movie, is that I couldn't really connect to them, which is really weird because I went to college in Manhattan, and I'm around that character's age range right now, and I also live in Times Square. I mean, there were so many parallels.
Oh, right. The character lives in Times Square. But I did like that line where she goes, I didn't know. I came from out of town. I thought the Times Square, everybody knows Times Square. I thought this was the hip neighborhood.
That's
like the worst place you'd want to live. I can't believe you live in Times Square, by the way. What is that
like? Well, you have a nicer apartment, I'm guessing, because I know you're building.
Mrs.
McCuddy, I haven't been there. It's a commercial.
Commercial zone.
She also has to sneak in the fire escape because her rent is overdue in the movie.
Well, they're kicking her out.
How do you like living in Times Square? Seriously,
I like it quite a bit.
But it's like the what's your name? The one that Martin Scorsese did. This is a name blanking today. The one that Martin Scorsese.
Jodie Foster.
No, he did a documentary on her. She's like Fran Lebowitz. She said that she drives the vintage 1950s car.
She has a checker.
Yeah, and she moved out of Times Square because she goes, it's just become too Disneyfied. What do you think of living in it's tourist central of the world.
Central of the world, but I have every single subway right outside my door. Everything is open 24/7, and the restaurants close down and open up before you know it. So I just have this ever-changing rotation of food to pick from.
Well, the thing with
you're kind of in an off street too. You're not under the ball when it drops.
I can walk to one side and be in Hell's Kitchen, but then I can walk to the other, which I did last year actually, and see the ball drop.
I like Greta Gerwig a lot. I mean, the first time she came to my attention was that Ben Stiller movie Greenberg. And I said, this woman is going to—I did that junket, and I said, you're going to be this is going to be a big star. And she didn't go the Kristen Wiig Martian route in terms of—she doesn't do blockbusters. She's staying in the indie world, which I respect. I really liked Frances Ha a lot. She was in that Whit Stillman movie. I mean, she's a very—she has this vivacious energy, and she has plays a quirky character in here that's kind of frenetic and all over the place and has 100 projects that she wants to do, none of which really she sees to the end.
Right.
And I kind of found that interesting. And I like Noah Baumbach. I like The Squid and the Whale. And, you know, it is her live-in boyfriend in real life.
As we're taping.
Yeah, so.
She hasn't met me yet.
But but I had a problem with the film. And that was that I found it interesting in the beginning. I mean, she finds out that, her mother's going to get married. Was it her mother or was it the father?
No, her mother is going to marry a guy.
Lola Kirk's mother was supposed to marry Greta Gerwig's father.
Right, so they're going to be stepsisters.
Lola Kirk, we should say, is this younger woman who is just going to
Barnard. She's going to Barnard.
Yeah.
And then
not fitting in.
And she, and I found it an interesting premise. But then once they go up to Connecticut, which is
a little weird road trip.
And their friend's house.
Yeah, and that to me, the movie really just went off the rails. And I'm like,
Still funny.
Nobody talks like this in real life. It was like I was watching a stage play. Nobody speaks
no
the way
these
people.
No one speaks like Aaron Sorkin, but I think Steve Jobs is going to win the screenplay.
No, I think Brooklyn is going
to.
I think Nick Hornby is going
to. Brooklyn win.
Brooklyn's the best movie of the year. It's the best.
I don't know if it's the best movie of the year, but that will undoubtedly be in my top five.
I love that movie. We've talked about it.
Three walkouts at my screening.
Get out of here.
I watched it in a real audience.
Well, they must have had a family emergency.
It's deadly.
Or they're just heartless.
It's the best.
Deadly for the first hour.
You're so wrong on this. I can't.
It's not good until they. I've seen it a second time now, and I do like it more. But it's not.
I love that movie.
Until she
that
goes
and Spotlight are my favorite movies so far this year. Apparently.
Well, that's because you're told.
What about you, Bill Gurley?
They're up there for me right now.
Everyone's being told Spotlight is the best movie.
Have you seen Revenant yet?
Right now, my favorite is Spotlight. I haven't seen Revenant.
Neil, do you know what my favorite is?
What's your favorite?
Mad Max.
That's on my worst 10 worst list. Okay, keep the cards and letters coming in, the tweets coming in, folks. I don't like Mad Max. Discussion for another day. Okay, also up there on demand
Mad Max is one of the 10
is American
there.
Ultra with Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart, two people that were together previously in a movie called Adventureland, which I kind of liked. Here's a movie that I...
Did they make out in that? Were they like...
No, they were in the movie together, yeah, so right. It's not like they met for the first time.
No, Jesse Eisenberg called his agent and said, get me another movie with Kristen Stewart where I get to make
Well, this is like an action comedy, and the premise is sort of like the Bourne Identity. I mean, here's this guy that's like this stoner, and he's, really does unbeknownst to him, he's a CIA killing machine operative. And what doesn't make sense in this movie to me at all, and Kristen Stewart plays his girlfriend, is all of a sudden Topher Grace, and he was trained, this guy, by Connie Britton, and Bill Pullman's in the movie for like a minute. I don't understand what that's all about. But
that's okay. No one listening does either. Keep going.
So, all of a sudden, Topher Grace wants this guy dead. The guy doesn't even know that he's a CIA operative. He hasn't even been activated. But the whole movie is built around the central premise of, like, why do you want this guy dead? He's smoking pot in the middle of nowhere. You know what I mean? So what's up with that?
They could be a potential threat. That's the problem.
Oh, come on. You know?
Didn't you walk out of Bourne Identity and say, that could have been funnier?
Well, that actually is very funny, but that's a whole. Did you like Bourne Identity? No, do you like Bourne Supremacy? Do you like Bourne Ultimatum? Do you like the Bourne with
Bourne Legacy?
Bourne Legacy, or the Bourne with what's his name? They recast the Bourne one.
Yeah, with Jeremy Renner.
With Jeremy Renner.
Bourne to Be Wild, I think it was.
Or Bourne Free, or the now Matt Damon is coming back to the Bourne franchise. Apparently,
he's not stupid.
Yeah, I know. So, what Bourne do you like the best, Bergoli?
I don't remember.
They all blend.
Bourne
to Be Wild. Bourne to Run, I think, is my favorite. It's the Bruce Springsteen song gets me every time, you know. But I didn't like this movie. I thought this movie was also like they didn't know where to go, you know, an hour in. And it's just like so many other movies. Let's just load it up with bullets and explosions. And,
well, I thought actually the action works okay. I thought it was. I thought that was.
Not funny, no. You like the action in this?
I thought the action was satisfying.
What about you, Perry?
I love the action because of how it was shot and the set design too. Like, you know, some of the blacklight stuff and when they're blowing stuff up in the supermarket too. Yeah. I mean, just some of that is very visually interesting to look at.
You know what was not
trouble afoot
at
the Circle K, to quote another famous.
I didn't like it. I was very bored. I didn't find it funny as a comedy, and I didn't find it interesting. I have to be invested in characters in order for action scenes to work for me. I got to tell you something. I know you love Mad Max, Perry. What did you think of Mad Max, Bergoli, by the way?
I had a ball. And my favorite part was the guitar with the flame shooting out of it.
You're going to be really embarrassed, Neil Rosen, when, or maybe you won't be. You've never been embarrassed in your life, probably. But you're going to be embarrassed when that movie ends up on a ton of top 10 lists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know.
And there's a real long shot that Charlize will get nominated for at least a Golden Globe. At least a Golden Globe.
I tell you what I'm going to do. I am going to actually, and I'm sure we're going to get the award screener on this thing. We have it already. I'm going to read.
You already threw it out.
No, I have it. I'm going to revisit this movie because. But I tell you, it was really painful to sit through. And even the opening sequence. I mean, it starts out with this like yes, visually, and I'll never, and I won't deny this that visually it is really well done. But you know, I'm not. All of a sudden, there's all this like 20 minutes of action, and there's no story. And I hate movies that start like that where there's other movies like this. I have to be invested in an action scene. I want the character to live. I have to have a rooting interest or die or something. And that eventually.
Haven't you ever been driving in your car and you're almost out of gas and you're not sure you're going to find a gas station?
2 days ago.
So that's this movie. They're always looking for gas. So just put yourself in that mindset.
I don't know. I know Perry. My favorite line on the TV show Talking Pictures when we did this Mad Max movie a number of months ago when it came out, Perry looks at me and she goes, I feel so sorry for you. What was it saying?
I think I said something like, I'm sad for you. Yeah. You don't love this much as we do.
Right. I'm just sad for you that you can't enjoy this particular movie. Well, I'm going to look at it again. It, you know, everybody loves this so much that, I will reinvest my time and take a look at it. My daughter is coming in for the weekend, for Thanksgiving weekend from college. So she's never saw it. So I will watch it again.
What time is she getting at the train station? We'll all go and pick her up. How are these sides? Well, anyway.
I don't know. It's a homie show.
Tom Hardy is, I think, the story here also. I mean, this guy, he's in the movie about the Krays called Legend, I think.
Yeah.
And
well, you love that movie where he's in the car with the.
Yeah, I thought
Locke
that was.
Locke is great.
Locke is a great movie.
Yeah, Locke is good.
You
got to
spend
Locke
more time with
him.
Perry needs to be on more often because she's the voice of reason.
All right, so before we go, yes, let me tell you, and I'll tell you about next week's show in a moment, but before we go, The Hunger Games, the last installment of, did not perform as well at the box office as. As the studio would have liked. And, you know, there is this trend lately where the studios will make more money by taking the last chapter of a book and making it two movies. They did this with the last Harry Potter movie. They did this. Didn't they do that?
They did this with Harry Potter, Twilight, Hunger Games, and next will be the new Divergent movie, Allegiant. That was split into two movies.
Right. So, okay. So I guess it's still worth it for the studio to split it, right, Bregoli? Because even though it didn't live up to expectations financially for the studio, they still made an extra X amount of dollars.
You know, $101 million on opening weekend is nothing to cry about.
Isn't it crazy that we live in a time where that's seen as a failure, or not a failure, but an underperformer? You know, they said the same thing about the Bond film when it didn't open to the Skyfall levels. And their reasons are, you know, if you go back and look at the time period, there's always a reason for that. And in the case of the Bond film, it opened against the Peanuts movie, which sucked about $50 million out of the market. The Skyfall had no competition the weekend it opened. This time, I think people are a little...
Actually, Paris hurt this movie.
Yeah, I think...
What about the Bullock movie? That one made like $3.5 million.
Nobody cared about that.
I mean, but that's not just a bomb. That's like a bomb beyond...
Our brand is in crisis.
That thing just
perfect
like...
name for the movie.
That title, I think, hurt it a lot. But, you know, with Hunger Games, odds are the senior people at Lionsgate were looking at it and like, we're going to make more money if we split it into two movies. But from a storytelling perspective, having split it into two movies, they took that book material like so above and beyond what it originally was. And I think it's because they had more time to explore the themes and the characters in it.
Did you like the last Hunger Games movie?
I was okay, but by the end of it, I was like, all right, end this now, please.
Well, it's got like
game
four
over.
Endings.
Yeah, that's,
game's
that's
over.
Part of it too.
To me, and this is just me, I like the Hunger Games. Like in the first movie, they had the Hunger Games where Colbert does a very funny bit. I don't know if you've seen this or not, where every time a Republican candidate drops out of the presidential race, he puts a wig on and imitates Stanley Tucci, and they have that drum thing like, we're going to say goodbye, yes, yes, we're going to say goodbye to, you know, whoever drops out of the race. But I like the Hunger Games aspect of the first two Hunger Games films, that there actually were Hunger Games. The last few, the Mockingjay stuff, it's gone into this whole political thing, which, you know, you either like that or you don't. I actually like the You know that Jennifer Lawrence isn't going to die because she signed on for the whole thing, but I still kind of like the Hunger Games, and that was lacking for me in the last couple of Hunger Games.
That's what's supposed to make the movie special, though, and also not about, you know, just kids killing kids, is that eventually it goes into this war and explores the meaning of the Hunger Games and how they need to overturn that system. But still, Catching Fire is my favorite movie. I like the structure of the games.
Did you like the last Hunger Games film?
I like all four, and I've been covering this ever since the rights to the book were first picked up. So I have written like hundreds and thousands of words on this franchise.
How do you think it compares to the Shailene Woodley series? Divergent.
I thought the first Divergent movie is perfectly fine. Insurgent is like pure garbage.
Yeah,
and
they
I'm
throw
really
the zombies
nervous
in?
About Allegiant.
That? No, the whole I think from Jump Street that was bad. I mean, I just think Shailene is miscast in that. I love her in other stuff, but I think Greta Gerwig would have been much better.
Well, they're butchering those books, too.
No, I think Chloe Sevigny would have been...
figure out how to pronounce her name, Neil.
Ray would have been really the way to go on that one.
Chloe, by the way, just called, and she's very sad for you.
Chloe's having it. Yeah.
What's next week, Neil?
Next week on the show. My goodness. We're going to talk about the documentary coming to demand and DVD, Amy, the Amy Winehouse story, which I'm really looking forward to. We're going to talk about the movie Breathe, which is... Who was in Breathe?
Frenchie. It's Frenchie. That's all
it's
I know.
Frenchie. It's Melanie Laurent. The woman from played Shoshana in Inglourious Bastards. Yeah. Her second directorial film, which is
she's also in that piece of junk that Mr. and Mrs. Pitt made. She's the neighbor in, isn't she, in the By the Sea?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think she's the couple that I haven't seen it, but
we're going to talk about a Wim Wenders film called Everything Will Be Fine. But the main thing we're going to talk about
is my critic's pick, which is Cartel Land.
No, is Creed. Is the once again another Rocky film from Sylvester Stallone?
Not quite.
He's made a lot of Rocky films.
He didn't direct.
Right, he didn't direct or write this one. That's actually true. But we'll talk about it next week. I have a lot. I've seen. Have you seen it yet?
Yes, I have.
I have seen
it
too.
I've gone to Philadelphia and stood in the actual gym.
Oh, great! So we'll
sound.
Brill Bagoli will have part of his interview with Sylvester Stallone and Michael B. Jordan. I'm assuming.
He talks too.
All right, so we'll have interviews with them, and we'll talk about how this compares to the other 3,000 Rocky films that have been come out along the way, including the other. Remember the De Niro boxing film with Sylvester Stallone, old guys boxing, Grudge Match. Grudge Match.
The one where he boxes Greta Gerwig?
I love that one. And she's perfectly cast.
I would actually watch that movie.
And I have something to say next week about the fact that in one of the Rockies, Rocky has gets punched drunk and he starts losing. But they've completely ignored that.
Don't worry. He gets another disease in this one.
Well, we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about
he's
many things.
He's forgotten that he has Alzheimer's? That's awful.
For don't Perry Nemiroff. That.
That's terrible.
Bill McCuddy.
Hi, that's me.
Bill Bregoli. And me, Neil Rosen. Thanks around. Thanks for sitting around talking movies. I blew the tag. We'll see you next week. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.